On the other hand, there was clearly a source of revenue if photographs at half a dollar each could be sold to the numerous sitters. Colonel Ilcott in his book produces a photograph of Mrs. White alongside of the one which was supposed to be Katie King, and claims that there is no resemblance. It is clear, however, that the photographer would be asked to touch up the negative so as to conceal the resemblance, otherwise the fraud would be obvious. The author has the impression, though not the certainty, that the two faces are the same with just such changes as manipulation would produce. Therefore he thinks that the photograph may well be a fraud, but that this by no means corroborates the rest of Mrs. White's narrative, though it would shake our faith in the character of Mr. and Mrs. Holmes as well as of Dr. Child. But the character of physical mediums has really only an indirect bearing upon the question of the reality of their psychic powers, which should be tested upon their own merits whether the individual be saint or sinner. Colonel Ilcott's wise conclusion was that, as the evidence was so conflicting, he would put it all to one side and test the mediums in his own way without reference to what was past. This he did in a very convincing way, and it is impossible for anyone who reads his investigation, People from the Other World, p. 460 and onwards, to deny that he took every possible precaution against fraud. The cabinet was netted at the sides so that no one could enter as Mrs. White claimed to have done. Mrs. Holmes was herself put into a bag which tied round the neck and, as her husband was away, she was confined to her own resources. Under these circumstances numerous heads were formed, some of which were semi-materialized, presenting a somewhat terrible appearance. This may have been done as a test, or it may have been that the long contention had impaired the powers of the medium. The faces were made to appear at a level which the medium could in no case have reached. Dale Owen was present at this demonstration and must have already begun to regret his premature declaration. Further copyright answers with similar results were then held in Ilcott's own rooms, so as to preclude the possibility of some ingenious mechanism under the control of the medium. On one occasion, when the head of John King, the presiding spirit, appeared in the air, Ilcott, remembering Eliza White's assertion that these faces were merely tents and masks, asked and obtained permission to pass his stick all round it, and so satisfied himself that it was not supported. This experiment seems so final that the reader who desires even more evidence may be referred to the book where he will find much. It was perfectly clear that whatever part Eliza White may have played in the photograph, there was not a shadow of a doubt that Mrs. Holmes was a genuine and powerful medium for material phenomena. It should be added that the Katie King head was repeatedly seen by the investigators, though the whole form appears only once to have been materialized. General Lippert was present at these experiments and associated himself publicly, Banner of Light, February 6, 1875, with Ilcott's conclusions. The author has dwelt at some length upon this case, as it is very typical of the way in which the public has been misled over spiritualism. The papers are full of an exposure. It is investigated and is shown to be either quite false or very partially true. This is not reported, and the public is left with the original impression uncorrected. Even now, when one mentions Katie King, one hears some critics say, "Oh, she was shown to be a fraud in Philadelphia," and by a natural confusion of thought this has even been brought as an argument against Crookes's classical experiments. The affair, especially the temporary weakening of De Loena, set the cause of spiritualism back by many years in America. Mention has been made of John King, the presiding spirit at the Holmes essay tilde copyright answers. This strange entity would appear to have been the chief controller of all physical phenomena in the early days of the movement, and is still occasionally to be seen and heard. His name is associated with the Coombs's Music Saloon, with the Davenport Brothers, with Williams in London, with Mrs. Holmes, and many others. In person when materialized he presents the appearance of a tall, swarthy man with a noble head and a full black beard. His voice is loud and deep, while his rap has a decisive character of its own. He is master of all languages, having been tested in the most out-of-the-way tongues, such as Georgian, and never having been found wanting. This formidable person controls the bands of lesser primitive spirits, Red Indians and others, who assist at such phenomena. He claims that Katie King is his daughter, and that he was himself when in life Henry Morgan, the buccaneer who was pardoned and knighted by Charles II and ended as governor of Jamaica. If so, he has been a most cruel ruffian and has much to expiate. The author is bound to state, however, that he has in his possession a contemporary picture of Henry Morgan. It will be found in Howard Pyle's Buccaneers, p. 178, and that if reliable it has no resemblance to John King. All these questions of earthly identity are very obscure. As the author has given a point against the identity of John King with Morgan, it is only fair that he should give one which supports it and comes to him almost first-hand from a reliable source. The daughter of a recent governor of Jamaica was at USA Tilda Copyright House in London lately, and was confronted with John King. The King's spirit said to her, "You have brought back from Jamaica something which was mine." She said, "What was it?" He answered, "My will." It was a fact, quite unknown to the company, that her father had brought back this document. Before closing the account of Alcott's experiences at this stage of his evolution, some notice should be taken of the so-called Compton Transfiguration case, which shows what deep waters we are in when we attempt psychic research. These particular waters have not been plumbed yet, nor in any way charted. Nothing can be clearer than the facts, or more satisfactory than the evidence. The medium Mrs. Compton was shut up in her small cabinet, and thread passed through the bored holes in her ears and fastened to the back of her chair. Presently a slim white figure emerged from the cabinet. Alcott had a weighing platform provided, and on it the spirit figure stood. Twice it was weighed, the records being 77 pounds and 59 pounds. Alcott then, as prearranged, went into the cabinet, leaving the figure outside. The medium was gone, the chair was there, but there was no sign of the woman. Alcott then turned back and again weighed the apparition, who this time scaled 52 pounds. The spirit then returned into the cabinet from which other figures emerged. Finally, Alcott says, "I went inside with a lamp and found the medium just as I left her at the beginning of the essay Tilda Copyright Dance, with every thread unbroken and every seal undisturbed. She sat there, with her head leaning against the wall, her flesh as pale and as cold as marble, her eyeballs turned up beneath the lids, her forehead covered with a death-like damp, no breath coming from her lungs and no pulse at her wrist. When every person had examined the threads and seals, I cut the flimsy bonds with a pair of scissors, and, lifting the chair by its back and seat, carried the cataleptic woman out into the open air of the chamber. She lay thus inanimate for 18 minutes, life gradually coming back to her body, until respiration and pulse and the temperature of her skin became normal. I then put her upon the scale. She weighed 121 pounds. What are we to make of such a result as that? There were 11 witnesses besides Alcott himself. The facts seem to be beyond dispute. But what are we to deduce from such facts? The author has seen a photograph, taken in the presence of an amateur medium, where every detail of the room has come out but the sitter has vanished. Is the disappearance of the medium in some way analogous to that? If the ectoplasmic figure weighed only 77 pounds and the medium 121 pounds, then it is clear that only 44 pounds of her were left when the phantom was out. If 44 pounds were not enough to continue the processes of life, may not her guardians have used their subtle occult chemistry in order to dematerialize her and so save her from all danger until the return of the phantom would enable her to reassemble? It is a strange supposition, but it seems to meet the facts, so which cannot be done by mere blank, unreasoning incredulity. 13. A. Henry Sladen's Dr. Monk, it is impossible to record the many mediums of various shades of power, and occasionally of honesty, who have demonstrated the effects which outside intelligences can produce when the material conditions are such as to enable them to manifest upon this plane. There are a few, however, who have been so preeminent and so involved in public polemics that no history of the movement can disregard them, even if their careers have not been in all ways above suspicion. We shall deal in this chapter with the histories of Slade and Monk, both of whom played a prominent part in their days. Henry Slade, the celebrated slate-writing medium, had been before the public in America for 15 years before he arrived in London on July 13, 1876. Colonel H. Esselcott, a former president of the Theosophical Society, states that he and Madame Blavatsky were responsible for Slade's visits to England. It appears that the Grand Duke Constantine of Russia, desiring to make a scientific investigation of spiritualism, a committee of professors of the Imperial University of St. Petersburg requested Colonel Olcott and Madame Blavatsky to select out of the best American mediums one whom they could recommend for tests. Illustration of Henry Slade. They chose Slade, after submitting him to exacting tests for several weeks before a committee of skeptics, who in their report certified that messages were written inside double slates, sometimes tied and sealed together, while they either lay upon the table in full view of all, or were laid upon the heads of members of the committee, or held flat against the undersurface of the tabletop, or held in a committeeman's hand without the medium touching it. It was en route to Russia that Slade came to England. A representative of the London World, who had a sitting with Slade soon after his arrival, thus describes him: a highly wrought, nervous temperament, a dreamy, mystical face, regular features, eyes luminous with expression, a rather sad smile, and a certain melancholy grace of manner, were the impressions conveyed by the tall, lithe figure introduced to me as Dr. Slade. He is the sort of man you would pick out of the roomful as an enthusiast. The Seabot Commission report says, he is probably 6 feet in height, with a figure of unusual symmetry, and that his face would attract notice anywhere for its uncommon beauty, and sums him up as a noteworthy man in every respect. Directly after his arrival in London, Slade began to give sittings at his lodgings in 8 Upper Bedford Place, Russell Square, and his success was immediate and pronounced. Not only was writing obtained of an evidential nature, under test conditions, with the sitter's own slates, but the levitation of objects and materialized hands were observed in strong sunlight. The editor of the Spiritual Magazine, the soberest and most high-class of the spiritualist periodicals of the time, wrote, "We have no hesitation in saying that Dr. Slade is the most remarkable medium of modern times." Mr. J. Enmore Jones, a well-known psychic researcher of that day, who afterwards edited the Spiritual Magazine, said that Slade was taking the place vacated by D.D. Home. His account of his first sitting indicates the businesslike method of procedure. In Mr. Holmes' case, he refused to take fees, and as a rule the sittings were in the evening in the quiet of domestic life, but in Dr. Slade's case it was any time during the day, in one of the rooms he occupies at a boarding house. The fee of 20 shillings is charged, and he prefers that only one person be present in the large room he uses. No time is lost. As soon as the visitor sits down, the incidents commence, are continued, and in, say, 15 minutes are ended. Stainton Moses, who was afterwards the first president of the London Spiritualist Alliance, conveys the same idea with regard to Slade. He wrote, "In his presence phenomena occur with a regularity and precision, with an absence of regard for conditions, and with a facility for observation which satisfy my desires entirely. It is impossible to conceive circumstances more favorable to minute investigation than those under which I witness the phenomena which occur in his presence with such startling rapidity." There was no hesitation, no tentative experiments. All was short, sharp, and decisive. The invisible operators knew exactly what they were going to do, and did it with promptitude and precision. The Spiritualist, Volume 9, p. 2. Slade's first essay tilde copyright Tance in England was given on July 15, 1876, to Mr. Charles Blackburn, a prominent spiritualist, and Mr. W. H. Harrison, editor of The Spiritualist. In strong sunlight, the medium and the two sitters occupied three sides of an ordinary table about 4 feet square. A vacant chair was placed at the fourth side. Slade put a tiny piece of pencil, about the size of a grain of wheat, upon a slate, and held the slate by one corner with one hand under the table flat against the leaf. Writing was heard on the slate, and on examination a short message was found to have been written. While this was taking place, the four hands of the sitters and Slade's disengaged hands were clasped in the center of the table. Mr. Blackburn's chair was moved 4 or 5 inches while he was sitting upon it, and no one but himself was touching it. The unoccupied chair at the fourth side of the table once jumped in the air, striking its seat against the under edge of the table. Twice a lifelike hand passed in front of Mr. Blackburn while both Slade's hands were under observation. The medium held an accordion under the table, and while his other hand was in clear view on the table hone, Sweet Home was played. Mr. Blackburn then held the accordion in the same way, when the instrument was drawn out strongly and one note sounded. While this occurred, Slade's hands were on the table. Finally, the three present raised their hands a foot above the table, and it rose until it touched their hands. At another sitting on the same day, a chair rose about 4 feet, when no one was touching it, and when Slade rested one hand on the top of Miss Blackburn's chair, she and the chair were raised about half a yard from the floor. Mr. Stainton Moses thus describes an early sitting which he had with Slade. A midday sun, hot enough to roast one, was pouring into the room. The table was uncovered, the medium sat with the whole of his body in full view. There was no human being present save myself and him. What conditions could be better? The raps were instantaneous and loud, as if made by the clenched fist of a powerful man. The slate writing occurred under any suggested condition. It came on a slate held by Dr. Slade and myself, on one held by myself alone in the corner of the table farthest from the medium, on a slate which I had myself brought with me, and which I held myself. The latter writing occupied some time in production, and the grating noise of the pencil informing each word was distinctly audible. A chair opposite to me was raised some 18 inches from the floor, my slate was taken out of my hand, and produced at the opposite side of the table, where neither Dr. Slade nor I could reach it. The accordion played all round and about me, while the doctor held it by the lower part, and finally, on a touch from his hand upon the back of my chair, I was levitated, chair and all, some inches. Mr. Stainton Moses was himself a powerful medium, and this fact doubtless aided the conditions. He adds, I have seen all these phenomena and many others several times before, but I never saw them occur rapidly and consecutively in broad daylight. The whole essay tilde copyright hence did not extend over more than half an hour, and no cessation of the phenomena occurred from first to last. The Spiritualist, Volume 9, p. 2. All went well for 6 weeks, and London was full of curiosity as to the powers of Slade, when there came an awkward interruption. Early in September, 1876, Professor Ray Lankester with Dr. Donkin had 2 sittings with Slade, and on the second occasion, seizing the slate, he found writing on it when none was supposed to have taken place. He was entirely without experience in psychic research, or he would have known that it is impossible to say at what moment writing occurs in such essay tilde copyright answers. Occasionally a whole sheet of writing seems to be precipitated in an instant, while at other times the author has clearly heard the pencil scratching along from line to line. To Ray Lankester, however, it seemed a clear case of fraud, and he wrote a letter to the Times denouncing Slade, and also prosecuted him for obtaining money under false pretenses. Replies to Lankester's letter and supporting Slade were forthcoming from Drive, Alfred Russel Wallace, Professor Barrett, and others. Dr. Wallace pointed out that Professor Lankester's account of what happened was so completely unlike what occurred during his own visit to the medium, as well as the recorded experience of Sergeant Cotts, Dr. Carter Blake, and many others, that he could only look upon it as a striking example of Dr. Carpenter's theory of preconceived ideas. He says, Professor Lancaster went with the firm conviction that all he was going to see would be imposture, and he believes he saw imposture accordingly. Professor Lancaster showed his bias when, referring to the paper read before the British Association on September 12 by Professor Barrett, in which he dealt with spiritualistic phenomena, he said, in his letter to the Times, "The discussions of the British Association have been degraded by the introduction of spiritualism." September 16, 1876. Professor Barrett wrote that Slade had a ready reply, based on his ignorance of when the writing did actually occur. He describes a very evidential sitting he had in which the slate rested on the table with his elbow resting on it. One of Slade's hands was held by him, and the fingers of the medium's other hand rested lightly on the surface of the slate. In this way, writing occurred on the undersurface of the slate. Professor Barrett further speaks of an eminent scientific friend who obtained writing on a clean slate when it was held entirely by him, both of the medium's hands being on the table. Such instances must surely seem absolutely conclusive to the unbiased reader, and it will be clear that if the positive is firmly established, occasional allegations of negative have no bearing upon the general conclusion. Slade's trial came on at Bow Street Police Court on October 10, 1876, before Mr. Flowers, the magistrate. Mr. George Lewis prosecuted and Mr. Munton appeared for the defense. Evidence in favor of the genuineness of Slade's mediumship was given by Dr. Alfred Russell Wallace, Sergeant Cox, Dr. George Wilde, and one other, only four witnesses being allowed. The magistrate described the testimony as overwhelming as to the evidence for the phenomena, but in giving judgment he excluded everything but the evidence of Lancaster and his friend Dr. Donkin, saying that he must base his decision on inferences to be drawn from the known course of nature. A statement made by Mr. Muskline, the well-known conjurer, that the table used by Slade was a trick table was disproved by the evidence of the workman who made it. This table can now be seen at the offices of the London Spiritualist Alliance, and one marvels at the audacity of a witness who could imperil another man's liberty by so false a statement, which must have powerfully affected the course of the trial. Indeed, in the face of the evidence of Ray Lancaster, Donkin, and Muskline, it is hard to see how Mr. Flowers could fail to convict, for he would say with truth and reason, "What is before the court is not what has happened upon other occasions, however convincing these eminent witnesses may be, but what occurred upon this particular occasion, and here we have two witnesses on one side and only the prisoner on the other." The trick table probably settled the matter. Slade was sentenced, under the Vagrancy Act, to 3 months' imprisonment with hard labor. An appeal was lodged and he was released on bail. When the appeal came to be heard, the conviction was quashed on a technical point. It may be pointed out that though he escaped on a technical point, namely, that the words, "by palm mystery or otherwise," which appeared in the statute had been omitted, it must not be assumed that had the technical point failed he might not have escaped on the merits of his case. Slade, whose health had been seriously affected by the strain of the trial, left England for the continent today or two later. From The Hague, after a rest of a few months, Slade wrote to Professor Lancaster offering to return to London and to give him exhaustive private tests on condition that he could come without molestation. He received no answer to his suggestion, which surely is not that of a guilty man. An illuminated testimonial to Slade from London Spiritualists in 1877 sets out, in view of the deplorable termination of Henry Slade's visit to this country, "We the undersigned desire to place on record a high opinion of his mediumship, and our reprobation of the treatment he has undergone. We regard Henry Slade as one of the most valuable test mediums now living. The phenomena which occur in his presence are evolved with a rapidity and regularity rarely equaled. He leaves us not only untarnished in reputation by the late proceedings in our law courts, but with a mass of testimony in his favor which could probably have been elicited in no other way. This is signed by Mr. Alexander Calder, President of the British National Association of Spiritualists, and a number of representative spiritualists. Unhappily, however, it is the nose, not the eyes, which have the ear of the press, And even now, 50 years later, it would be hard to find a paper enlightened enough to do the man justice. Spiritualists, however, showed great energy in supporting Slade. Before the trial, a defense fund was raised, and spiritualists in America drew up a memorial to the American minister in London. Between the Bow Street conviction and the hearing of the appeal, a memorial was sent to the Home Secretary protesting against the action of the government in conducting the prosecution on appeal. Copies of this were sent to all the members of the legislature, to all the Middlesex magistrates, to various members of the Royal Society, and of other public bodies. Miss Kislingbury, the secretary to the National Association of Spiritualists, forwarded a copy to the Queen. After giving successful essay tilde copyright answers at The Hague, Slade went to Berlin in November, 1877, where he created the keenest interest. He was said to know no German, yet messages in German appeared on the slates, and were written in the characters of the 15th century. The Berliner Fremdenblatt of November 10, 1877, wrote, "Since the arrival of Mr. Slade at the Kronprinz Hotel, the greater portion of the educated world of Berlin has been suffering from an epidemic which we may term a spiritualistic fever." Describing his experiences in Berlin, Slade said that he began by fully converting the landlord of the hotel, using the latter's slates and tables in his own house. The landlord invited the chief of police and many prominent citizens of Berlin to witness the manifestations, and they expressed themselves as satisfied. Slade writes, "Samuel Bellocchini, court conjurer to the Emperor of Germany, had a week's experience with me free of charge. I gave him from 2 to 3 essay tilde copyright answers a day and one of them at his own house. After his full and complete investigation, he went to a public notary and made oath that the phenomena were genuine and not drakery." Bellocchini's declaration on oath, which has been published, bears out this statement. He says that after the minutest investigation, he considers any explanation by conjuring to be absolutely impossible. The conduct of conjurers seems to have been usually determined by a sort of trade union jealousy, as if the results of the medium were some sort of breach of a monopoly, but this enlightened German, together with Howden, Keller, and a few more, have shown a more open mind. A visit to Denmark followed, and in December began the historic essay tilde copyright answers with Professor Zollner, at Leipzig. A full account of these will be found in Zollner's Transcendental Physics, which has been translated by Mr. C.C. Massey. Zollner was professor of physics and astronomy in the University of Leipzig, and associated with him in the experiments with Slade were other scientific men, including William Edward Weber, professor of physics, Professor C. Ebner, a distinguished mathematician, Gustav Theodor Fechner, professor of physics and an eminent natural philosopher, who were all, says Professor Zollner, perfectly convinced of the reality of the observed facts, altogether excluding imposture or prestidigitation. The phenomena in question included, among other things, the production of true knots in an endless string, the rending of Professor Zollner's bed screen, the disappearance of a small table and its subsequent descent from the ceiling in full light, in a private house and under the observed conditions, of which the most noticeable is the apparent passivity of Dr. Slade during all these occurrences. Certain critics have tried to indicate what they consider insufficient precautions observed in these experiments. Dr. J. Maxwell, the acute French critic, makes an excellent reply to such objections. He points out that because skilled and conscientious psychic investigators have omitted to indicate explicitly in their reports that every hypothesis of fraud has been studied and dismissed, in the belief that their implicit affirmation of the reality of the fact appeared sufficient to them, and in order to prevent their reports from being too unwieldy, yet captious critics do not hesitate to condemn them and to suggest possibilities of fraud which are quite inadmissible under the observed conditions. Metapsychical Phenomena, Translation 1905, p. 405. Zollner gave a dignified reply to the supposition that he was tricked in these cord-tying experiments, if, nevertheless, the foundation of this fact, deduced by me on the ground of an enlarged conception of space, should be denied. Only one other kind of explanation would remain, arising from a moral code of consideration that at present, it is true, is quite customary.